For KOSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time once again for This Week in Oklahoma Politics with ACLU Oklahoma Executive Director Ryan Kiesel and Republican political consultant Neva Hill. Well, Governor Fallon and other state leaders are currently in Europe to attend the Paris Air Show and promote Oklahoma to businesses in Germany and Italy. A trip for Fallon and others is getting paid for by an economic development group, but the Commerce Department is paying for a five-person delegation to go. Meanwhile, the Democratic Party is raising concerns about the timing and requesting open records. Ryan, what are your thoughts on this trip?
You know, I think that it's perfectly legitimate for the state's executive to be involved and encouraging people to move their businesses here, bring jobs to Oklahoma. So that in and of itself, that doesn't bother me. This has happened for time immemorial, and you know, I suspect that governors in the past and governors in the future are going to continue to do this regardless of what political party they come from. Some of the things that do concern me about it are the fact that the governor's trip, not the folks from the Commerce Department, but the governor's trip was financed by this group called the Business Roundtable. And if you look up at the Business Roundtable, it's an essentially collection of all the state's top businesses who get together for the educational purposes of trying to help business succeed in Oklahoma. That's a good deal. But a lot of these folks and these entities that are members of the Business Roundtable also have very distinct political agendas. And so for them to be able to finance a trip to Europe for our governor, to me, is concerning. If we can afford to send folks from the Commerce Department, why didn't the state just pick up the tab and let's get rid of the conflicts of interest? And then finally, if we really want to recruit businesses to Oklahoma, then we've got to be investing in infrastructure, we've got to be investing in education, we've got to be investing in the health care of our citizens, and we've got to do what we can to remedy our perception of being some sort of a cultural backwater to the rest of the world. If the governor would do those things, then I think we would be more successful at bringing businesses from across the globe to Oklahoma.
Neva. Well, we're kind of mixing a lot of different elements there. But first of all, I do agree with Ryan. I mean, it is a good thing. It's certainly Oklahoma was one of 11 states at the air show in Paris. I think there were eight governors there. So it's certainly an opportunity to be among the not only the opinion leaders but the major CEOs and executives of industry who. It's a perfect opportunity, particularly with aerospace and our focus for now several years. I mean, we have, as a state, had delegations in 2011 and 2013, as this air show happens every 2 years. We've been building, I think, a strong network of contacts, and clearly I think there is an expectation that we will yield some real results from that. So the idea that the roundtable somehow that compromises or taints the situation, I mean, let's face it. I mean, if that were true, then, you know, business leaders shouldn't give political contributions to someone that they want to see in office because they support their agenda or have like-minded ideas on issues. So it's a way to alleviate the state from having to pay the full tab. It's something that I think across the board, if you looked at almost any state in the union, you would see this sort of thing happen. So I think it's unfortunate to try to kind of tar and feather some of these folks for trying to be proactive in helping the state and helping industry be brought to the state and have better paying jobs. All of the things that we're interested in being improved only come if we enhance the economic development in our state. And I think that's where the governor has been very good and very proactive.
One of the things that was brought up in the issues was the timing, the fact that we are dealing with these flooding situations, that we're dealing with all these problems with weather. And should she have remained here because the fact that Oklahoma is dealing with all these weather issues right now?
Well, I mean, it's one of those things there's never probably the perfect insight on the front end of this. I mean, these things are planned years in advance. The air show, as I said, I mean, every other year they know it's going to happen date certain.
Right,
in
right.
June. So I think she had made preparations to be there. Certainly the lieutenant governor, others in the administration were there to pick up and handle the details. And in this day and age with technology, I mean, she certainly basically in real time knows everything that's going on in Oklahoma, even if she's in
right.
Germany or England or France or wherever it happens to be.
Oklahoma City is considering its options after inheriting the American Indian Cultural Center and Museum from the state. Even Oklahoma City Mayor Mick Cornett is taking issue with some parts of the deal. Neva, is this facility still in doubt?
Well, it's still a deal that it continues to be mired in a lot of conflict, a lot of
one
details.
One more committee.
One more. I mean, you know, for 30 years, I mean, it's one of these albatrosses that everyone someday hopes is not at the forefront of just being kicked around and and talked about in this fashion. But yeah, I mean, everyone wants to know who's getting the short end on this deal, and I think Oklahoma City now has some questions, and certainly from the city council perspective, I mean, these folks have to cast a vote on this, and many of them are going to be up for re-election next year, so they're, you know, they have to look at the, just like legislators had to look at the political ramifications. Now you have a city council that they may have, you know, they have may have people in the city administration. They may have strong downtown supporters and others who, you know, have a certain opinion. But at the end of the day, they have to make that vote, and it could be one that has political consequences.
Ryan,
they're going to have to make the case to the people of Oklahoma City, just like Neva said. You have these city council members who I think are much more, at a personal level, have a much more greater stake in the outcome of what happens to the cultural center than most members of the legislature. Every one of these council members lives in the city in which this cultural center exists. You know, you can't say the same for every member of the legislature. So this is really in their backyard. And I think that the case that has to be made is a difficult one. They've watched for years as this has been the albatross around the legislature's neck. They want to make sure that doesn't happen here. And I think that they've got a lot at stake, you know, not just with this particular project, but with their reputation. The Oklahoma City Council and Oklahoma City government for decades now have been putting MAPS projects in front of the people of Oklahoma City, have garnered their trust that they are, you know, with a few exceptions, you know, the convention center would be one that I would point out, but, you know, with few exceptions, that they have garnered the trust of the people of Oklahoma City to make wise investments in the city's future. And if they inherit this and they don't do it the right way, and this becomes the same lead around their neck that the legislature has been faced with over the last many years, then I think that they lose a lot of that trust, and it could have a consequential impact on the city's reputation moving forward with future MAPS projects or other investments.
What if the city says no?
Well, it's a big question. I mean, I think one of the real issues here is everyone recognizes something has to be done. I think now we're arguing over the dollars of, do we recoup and go back and try to get some money back that we've been paying in this debt to retire, you know, the debt $2 million a year, whatever it's been, all of these other things. That's a real problem. And I think what they've got to all come back to the table and recognize is everyone's going to have to give a little more. And I think that, you know, everyone has got to decide that this is just, it may be no good deal for everyone, but ultimately, the only way it gets to be a good deal for anyone is to finally get past this, you know, this money logjam, which has been the whole crux of the matter, really, right, with the legislature, you know, from day one, and be honest about it. And I think you're right, Ryan. I mean, it will be incumbent upon the mayor and the council to sell it to the people that, hey, this wasn't our idea, but this is in our backyard. This is something we need to be proud of, not to have to kind of turn our head or not want to point to when we have, you know, family in from out of state and try to explain what that is, but get past it and get the job done. So, you know, I think we're a long way from getting there, but hopefully cool heads will prevail and we'll see some real results by the fall.
If we don't do something, we're just going to have this performance art piece out in the middle of I-40, right, I-35, where, you know, generations of Oklahomans watch it deteriorate in some capacity or another. And, you know, we'll remember years when the roof caved in and the years when, whenever the deer started roaming around in the lobby. And, you know, that's, I mean, I think that if we all look at it, you know, there's got to be a scenario that's better than that. But and I think that we'll get there, you know, whether that's, you know, private sector folks coming in and taking over ownership, but again, all of that requires some legislative bargain, and, you know, we've got one on the table now for the first time ever, and the likelihood of getting another one in the not too distant future, I think, is unlikely. So this one's got to work, otherwise I think we're back to square one.
The legislative session ended last month without passing a bill to require lawmakers to deal solely with the budget every 2 years and deal with substantive issues every other year. But Senate President Pro Tem Brian Bingaman still wants to bring it up again next year. House members who only get two-year terms are raising concerns about this. Ryan, you were in the House. Do you feel those concerns are warranted?
No, absolutely. I think that they are. But I also think that the concerns about not being able to pay enough attention to the budget are a real concern. And we saw that This year was unprecedented for many reasons, in the lack of transparency and the lack of input. But in many ways, it wasn't. You know, in many ways, it was just, you know, business as usual, with a handful of people at the last minute rolling out a budget and the majority of legislators being able to take a look at it and vote on it with little input from experts in the agencies and their constituents. So the idea that we would be able to go to a legislative session and focus exclusively on the budget, to me, sounds like a pretty good idea. But yeah, I think that, you know, we'll get to a point where there are other things that we can do to the way our government is set up and established, that could cure for that, including moving to a unicameral legislature. I know that the auditor and inspector Gary Jones is talking about putting a ballot initiative out there to make it such that we've got one chamber of the legislature. Now, I think that the only real way that we could do that and make it work would be if we move to a proportional representation system. I'm going to be floating that idea with Auditor Jones in the not too distant future. We'll see how high that balloon floats.
Pop.
But I do think that there are ways that we can deal with this. It is a legitimate concern. But you know, that's if the most important thing that lawmakers have to do at the Capitol is to pass a budget. And of the thousands of bills that are filed, only a handful are ever enacted into law. And of those thousands, many of them are there just purely for political purposes, either to go in some sort of a campaign brochure or to help raise dollars or both. And so I think we can get rid of a lot of that. And the concerns are legitimate, but I don't think that they override the need for focus on the budget.
Yeah.
Well, I think the reality is the House isn't going to go along with this, just like they didn't go along with it this past session. It's unfortunate because no one is ever going to get a handle on appropriations, the budget, the agencies, where there is some realistic places to make, you know, legitimate cuts, where the real needs are, and they can build a consensus for more dollars when it's been very difficult to get them in the past. And, you know, I think that the idea that really it comes down to the House and the Senate, it's who gets to advance more bills. I mean, it's really kind of a little turf war. Mm-hmm. I mean, the poor House, they only get 8 bills a session, 16 bills in their two-year term, versus on the Senate side where they average somewhere around maybe 50 bills in that same period. And so, I mean, that give and take on that kind of nonsense is unfortunate. I mean, when you have 2,100 bills go through the legislative session and the governor ultimately only signs 418 of those into law, I mean, there are a lot of bills. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's have forums where they can all talk about their ideas, but do they need to introduce them as legislation, knowing it's going nowhere except get them a fast headline, maybe? And certainly those headlines, as we saw last session, many of them are not to our benefit, do not help us nationally. They do not even help us, you know, among the folks back home that they're trying to explain what they're up there doing in terms of the people's business. So I think it's going to take legislative courage among legislative leaders to really step up and say, okay, we are going to do this. Yes, a lot of you aren't going to like it, but this is what's necessary. And maybe we do it only for a limited amount of time. Maybe we do it to where we can, in this climate of term limits and so much shifting and changing in terms of the leaders not being there long enough to really learn the ropes,
right.
Maybe we find that out of that process we can at least get further down the road in being realistic on budget considerations, and not like you say. I mean, it's less about transparency. It's more about folks really spending the time, rolling up their sleeves and spending the time. It's very easy for them to sit back, let everybody else duke it out, and then want to come in at the last hour and say, oh, I'm not going to vote for the budget, you know, because I don't, you know, I don't think it has X, Y, or Z, or I haven't had time to really thoroughly look at it. Well, that's their job. So that really doesn't wash, I think, with most constituents back home. But I think the bigger picture is, if they want to advance this, the governor has said she's supportive of the idea, mm-hmm. of the pro tem's idea, then everybody put some political capital on the table next session and try to move it forward rather than just do the give and take of knowing, hey, at the end of the day, we know what the result is. It's going nowhere.
Now, one bill that did pass makes it easier for third parties to get on the ballot. Organizers with the Green and Libertarian parties are wasting no time to get their candidates on the ballot in 2016. Neva, is this a good thing for Oklahoma?
I think it's always a good thing. I mean, it's been since 2000 that we've seen third parties on the ballot. I think the fact that the Green Party and the Libertarian Party are banding together in a coalition, I think their first actual petitioners training event is tomorrow in downtown Oklahoma City, where they're trying to really kind of build a grassroots network and activism, it's a good thing. I think certainly when you look at the number that it's going to take for both of those parties to get on the ballot, it's certainly an attainable goal. I think traditionally libertarians have been more organized and have more, you know, broad-based support as a party across the state than the Green Party or some of the other lesser-known parties that now could come into the mix as well. Mm-hmm. But Justice Party, and I think there are several others that have been mentioned. But I think the fact that they now have a voice and have a reason to get more energized and involved in the process is something. Ballot access is a topic that has been here and across the nation now for, you know, decades, and I think we're a little late coming to the dance on this idea. But the fact that the governor signed it, the fact that it goes into effect November 1, I think is a good thing.
Then could this hurt the Democratic Party, which is already sitting in the very low minority?
Yeah, I think competition's always good. And, you know, I think that this is an exciting thing for Oklahoma. You know, one of the fastest growing voter segments out there are independent voters. Mm-hmm. And these are a lot of folks that, you know, may end up siding with third parties. The problem is that we've got to this point where it's still not easy in Oklahoma. You know, we're still one of the more difficult states to get ballot access. It's getting better with this new law that just is going into effect. But you know, we still don't have governing access, right? So you can get on the ballot, but we have winner-take-all, single-member majority districts where you've got to get 50% plus one of the vote to get elected into office. That wildly favors two-party systems. And mm-hmm. So you've got these two dominant major political parties, or in Oklahoma, one pretty dominant, the other not as dominant, and then everybody else is just kind of left by the wayside. And so, you know, I think that if we're going to get to a point where we truly realize the benefit of these increased voices in the political dialogue, we've got to really think about how can we get more parties into the governing process. And I think that right now, no matter how strong these parties get, no matter how many signatures they get, no matter how big the independent voter bloc gets in Oklahoma, the system is set up so that Republicans and Democrats almost always win. And if we can move to a system of proportional representation, if we can move to a system that brings more voices to the table and lowers that threshold, not to that 50% plus one, but to a much lower threshold where you're able to represent a lot of unrepresented voices in Oklahoma, then these third parties become even more relevant. Right now, with just ballot access, it's good, but their voices aren't going to have a big impact at the end of the day
on
the way the state goes.
Though with the majority, with the Republicans, that you've got the Libertarians who come in and you could actually divide up the votes?
I don't know that there's concern. I think, first of all, I mean, what we have to see is any party going out and going through the process of getting these approximately 25,000, you know, legal qualified signatures on a ballot, on a petition, to get them recognized and on the ballot. That's the first process. And I think when you talk about the selection process and the competitiveness, yes, it is. It's two-party dominated.
Right.
It will continue to be. But independents can have an effective voice in a third party or as independents if they, in fact, can do several things that heretofore have not really happened. They've got to advance candidates that somehow have broad-based appeal that can get Democrats and Republicans alike to vote for them. Secondly, they've got to be able to get the money, which is always the Achilles heel in anything when we talk about politics, because they are going to have to be recognized as entities and as candidates that can be competitive. People don't want to give if they don't believe mm-hmm. they have an opportunity to win. That's just the reality of it. But I think long term, as we look down the road, there is evolving. I mean, as we've talked about many times, more and more folks are identifying as independents as opposed to one of the two major parties. So there are some opportunities. It's kind of in a wide open field, and it's going to take some real leadership to be able to bring all of these folks together.
Well, there are other things we've got to think about, too. With the growing independent bloc, if we really want to value their voices, then we've got to do things beyond just ballot access. We've got to look at open primaries, because so many of Oklahoma's races are decided in primaries. And so the fastest growing electoral demographic in Oklahoma is literally shut out of the process of selecting large numbers of the Oklahoma legislature. So open primaries are a part of that. And we've got this changing political landscape, and we've got to make sure that the machinery of our democracy keeps up with it. I mean, We can't just say, well, this was fine in 1907, it must be fine now. I mean, we've really got to think about where we are as a state and what can we do with our democracy to make sure that it's more representative of the
people. And ultimately, it is an education process. And first and foremost, we've got to get more people to believe in the significance and importance of going to the polls, even among those who are registered now, just in the two major parties.
Exactly. And Ryan and Eva's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the ACLU, KOSU, its staff, or management.